Good afternoon, and thank you for listening to Quality of Life, the radio show, sponsored by Quality of Life Medical and Research Center in Tucson, sunny Tucson, right near TMC, is where we're located. This is Ronald Zack. I'm one of the co-hosts of the show, and I'm here with Dr. Jack McGettigan, the other co-host, and we're also here with Veronica Sternitsky from the Ronald Zack Law Firm. And we're going to be talking to Robin Coates from Tucson Senior Placement in just a little bit. A couple of things. We're going to, of course, do some news. We like to do some medical and legal news you can't use. And medical and legal news you can't use. I was also going to say we're introducing a new feature, a word of the day. And the word today is gimbal. I don't know what it means, but we do have some news. So
now, you're sure, right?
Yeah, we're gonna legal and medical news you can't use. This is uninformative and useless bits of information. Came across some interesting stories this week when Massachusetts is going to the next step in gun control, and Charles probably knows about this. Charles Heller, who's on the other side of the glass, as they say.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
That's right, the wizard. So there's two bills that are pending in Massachusetts. They're both entitled An Act to Ensure the Responsible Use of Advanced Robotic Technologies. And these bills make it a crime for Commonwealth citizens. That's what they call you if you live in Massachusetts. Commonwealth citizens to make or operate any robotic device or unscrewed aircraft that is equipped with any weapon. And they have a definition of weapon, of course. So illegal to manufacture, modify, sell, transfer, operate a robotic device mounted with a weapon. They're really into this weapon, so you could be safe around robots. California, this was fascinating to me because I always learn something. In Alameda County, near San Francisco, they did have a vote last week, Tuesday, to ban the practice of wild cow milking in unincorporated parts of the county. And I had no idea this sport existed, and I would love to see it. But in this sport, a two-man team tries to get milk from a cow turned loose in an arena. And it's you got these two guys, one of them lassoes the cow, and the other one has to run up to it and milk it. And you have to get one drop of milk. And as soon as the cow's milked, a clock stops, and whoever gets milk in the shortest time wins. Why don't we do things like that here? I don't know what's wrong with us. A student died. Well, this is kind of a public public service announcement. Doctor, we're going to do some wild cow milking. Doctors warning as student dies hours after eating reheated pasta dinner. So this kid in college, a college student, had a pasta dinner, and he left it sitting out for a week. And then he put it in the microwave, heated it up, ate it, went out to do something, and got sick, came back, went to bed, and woke up dead. We didn't actually wake up. But it boggles my mind that for those of us who love eating at buffets, how long has the food been out there and how's it taken care of? But so the public service announcement part of this article is it's recommended to refrigerate perishable food within 2 hours of preparation.
Well, he won't do that again.
No, he won't. He won't. In Magnesia, Greece, a flock of sheep got into a greenhouse and ate more than 600 pounds of marijuana plants. And the only thing that they note here is that the sheep were were seen jumping higher than goats. So I guess they did well.
And really chowing down on the grass.
Right, right. Australian man faked his own kidnapping. This was one of my favorites. This man in Australia, now he's been sentenced to pay compensation to police of what equals $10,334 because they had to invest his kidnapping. He made up a kidnapping story because he wanted to spend the night with another woman, not with the woman he usually spends the night with. And so, you know, she received a text that he would be like kidnapped until the morning, but then it would be okay. But she notified the police and the police investigated. They put 200 hours of police work into investigating his kidnapping. So he's got to pay for that and do 350 hours of community service. That one's boring. A human blood artist. Have you ever heard of human blood artists? This self-described human blood artist pled guilty to trafficking human remains. Somehow he was obtaining stolen body parts from Harvard Medical School. So they were probably upper crust body parts. And he was he would sell some. He would sell them again and advertise them, but he did some blood painting with him. He used blood painting. He's a body modification artist whose face is covered with tattoos and his head is decorated with metal spikes. And there's some great pictures. I'll hold it up to the microphone. And he's just a very interesting character. I would like to meet him, but he's going to prison. So I probably...
Lawyers are allowed to go and visit people in prison, I believe.
That's true. I could go.
Exactly.
I could go,
you know where he'll be.
That's right. It'll be easy to find. They found 3 5-gallon buckets containing assorted body parts, including 2 brains, human skin and fat, a heart, a kidney, livers, lungs, a trachea, and a child's mandible with teeth. And they were all for sale at one time. And there's a story here, New York porch pirate uses DoorDash. So this is a girl, and she's actually kind of an attractive young lady. I'll show her picture to the microphone here. And she used DoorDash. So she was a DoorDash person, and then she would go up to the door and steal their packages that were being delivered and leave the DoorDash bag there or something. So it's kind of a... And interesting. It's great how we can invent new crimes with the technology that we have available to us at this time. We're going to be back in a minute, 2 minutes, with our guest and the rest of our frivolity. Welcome back. You're listening to Quality of Life Radio Show with your co-hosts, Ronald Zack from Ronald Zack Law, and also from Quality of Life Medical Center. I work at both places. And Dr. Jack McGettigan, the co-host and sponsor of the show, is here. And we were talking about a contest that we're wanting to do and make some offers, some kind of a prize for lawyer and doctor jokes. And Dr. McGettigan, do you have an example of a doctor joke?
Well, actually, I have quite a few.
Just
how much time do we have?
It's dwindling.
It's dwindling. Well,
just gimbal a joke along here.
I do have a joke here. And this is the doctor speaking to his patient. And the doctor says, I have some bad news and some very bad news. And the patient says, well, might as well give me the bad news first. And the doctor says, well, the lab called with your test results. They said you have 24 hours to live. The patient said, 24 hours? That's terrible. which is what I think I would say if I were the patient.
Mm-hmm.
What could possibly be worse? What's the very bad news, doctor? Well, I've been trying to reach you since yesterday.
That's funny.
Ba-da-bum.
Well, it tickled my funny bone.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, Veronica didn't laugh. But if you can contact us either through the website, by email, by telephone, and what is the phone number at the clinic?
Well, we've got several, but 520-733-2250. You could leave it with our staff there. Or you could email us. My email is drjack@qlmc.com. And I don't know if we can post that on our video screen for our viewers to look at.
Oh, yes, we can post that. Where's the video screen?
What? You can see it. I can see it.
Oh, okay. Yep.
It's kind of like you're showing pictures for them.
Oh, I get it.
What's the prize?
The prize is a massage. We at Quality of Life Medical Center, there is an amazing massage therapist. And the prize is a...
1 hour massage.
1 hour massage.
And we're going to do this on a monthly basis if it's a hit. So the first winner will be announced when, Ron?
The first show of November.
I like that.
Okay. We're just doing this on the fly, by the way. If it's not obvious, if we ever look prepared, worry.
Well, we better tell our massage therapist, too.
Yeah. We'll let her know.
Hopefully she's listening.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sure she is.
If not, you can send her to the podcast.
If we can. Yep, the podcast will be available. And also, what we're doing here, and particularly the articles and that we're talking about, are likely to be popping up on the Ronald Zach Law Facebook page, too. So you can find us there and a lot of information about the show. You can call into the show, 520-790-2040, 520-790-2040, and that's read at the speed of the fountain pen. So
slightly slower than the ballpoint.
Yeah, it is a little bit slower. So we have with us from Tucson Senior Placement, which is a no-cost placement service for seniors and their families. And this is one of my favorite people, Robin Coates.
Thank you, Ron.
Robin, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am originally from New Jersey. I've been here 23 years. And I started my company 7.5 years ago. I was formerly in advertising. I worked at the newspaper and I worked at Tucson Lifestyle. And then I got into this industry in 2012. I was working in a freestanding memory care community.
Very good. And that's kind of become a focus of your placement activities, is people with dementia. Is that...
Yes,
correct.
I specialize in dementia. I am a trained Alzheimer's support group facilitator. I've run support groups at the Pima Council on Aging, and I'm actually starting up another one with Harmony Community Healthcare, who used to be called Harmony Hospice, and that will start the first Thursday in November, and it will be at their offices on Broadway, their new offices, from 2 to 3:30. So we'll be promoting that. It's free for anyone who wants to attend. What I find is a lot of people don't know the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia, and Alzheimer's is just the most common type of dementia.
Okay. And is there a question from the Peanut Gallery?
There is. What do you do for people to... as far as a therapy or a treatment or just a palliative care, what do you do for people with dementia?
Well, I don't do anything for them. I help their families to find either a memory care community where they can live or an assisted living community. You know, a lot of times people get hung up on whether or not they need a diagnosis and they get caught up with going to neurologist, which is a good idea. But oftentimes people don't have a diagnosis and they don't have someone to care for them, especially if their spouse has died. So a lot of times I'll get a call from a neighbor or a distant relative that they can't live home alone. So what I do is usually interview whoever's helping that potential resident to find out what their care needs are, what their budget is like, do they have all their paperwork in order? And then I would take the family out or whoever's helping that person and tour different communities to find them a safe place to live. And then once we do that, I don't charge families for my services. And there are a lot of placement agents out there that do a good job. And unlike A Place for Mom, we're local. So we will usually interview the potential resident. If they're in the hospital, we'll go do an assessment and then tour with the family or whoever's looking for. It's not always memory care. It might be independent living. It might be assisted living. So we really act as an advocate. And then if we place that person, we get a commission from the care home. And it's usually 50% of the first month's rent. So there's no charge to families. And a lot of families don't know that.
Very beneficial service.
Do you have anything for the families themselves? I would think that they're suffering a lot with this issue.
Well, usually the caregiver, let's say it's a husband and wife and the husband's taking care of his wife, the caregiver's usually the person who ends up in the hospital. And I'm not a medical professional, but I have studied dementia for probably 11 years. And it's a tough journey. It's a really difficult journey. I love it. I love meeting people with dementia and helping them on their path. But it's not always easy for the person who's doing the care. So oftentimes people make a promise to their spouse, you know, I'm never going to place you. But one thing I try to stress is that you're not abandoning the person, you're getting a team of people to help, because as the disease progresses, it does get very difficult. There's a lot that goes on. So basically what I do is I just try to educate people about what's going on, because a lot of times they will come into the support group and say, you know, my mom's driving me crazy. She keeps crashing the car and she's asking me the same questions. They don't understand that she has a disease. So just educating them and letting them know that there are services out there, because not everyone wants to place their loved one. Some people want to keep someone at home. So there are other services out there that are available to help people with the care. For example, you can get in-home caregivers. Sometimes people have hospice come into the home if someone's close to end of life or needs extra help. And there are a lot of resources in the community. I know the Pima Council on Aging is a good place to start if you are at a loss for what to do. They have some good people over there.
And I've worked in the past with the Alzheimer's Association as well. And they have many resources available or can help. And your Thursday night or Thursday afternoon, 2 to 3:30 p.m. Thursday, starting the first Thursday in November, is that a weekly support group?
It's going to be twice a month, the first and third Thursday from 2 to 3:30. And I'm sorry, Ron, I don't have their address. It's Harmony Community Healthcare. It's, I think, on Williams Boulevard, but they just moved their office a couple weeks ago, and I don't have the current address.
Okay.
We're just in the process of putting that ad together and putting the information. We just finalized everything this week.
I think our behind the curtain guy is looking up the address for us.
Oh, there you go.
But I bet you Veronica finds it first. Cause
it's a contest. Is this worth a massage?
She can use both thumbs. In that millennial thumbs. But we are looking. I've worked a lot in the past also. Actually, I used to work as a nurse at Harmony Hospice. I was there for a while.
Tucson's a small town.
Mm-hmm. It sure is.
So they are located at 310 South Williams Boulevard, Suite 210, and we'll be hosting that in the conference room. So everyone's welcome. Of course, there's no charge. And it's a good way to get information. I learn a lot from the people at the support groups because luckily I'm not taking care of anyone with dementia right now.
Is there room for how many people? Do you know?
Hundreds.
Oh, really? Okay. It's a big facility.
It's a big room. Yeah.
It is. It's a very big room.
Mm-hmm. And everybody gets a chance
to talk. We won't have
talk.
Hundreds, but yeah, we want everybody to come and feel comfortable. Usually these support groups, maybe we get a dozen people to start with, and then it kind of builds momentum. And it's nice for people to connect with others who are going through the same process because it gives them peace of mind and people exchange resources. It's helpful.
Do you have snacks, cookies, anything to bribe folks with?
Well, I was going to ask you if you'd like to bring the snacks, doctor.
Carrot sticks and celery.
I think we have some left over from the
leftover
bio
pasta.
Community.
Oh, we do, yes. Yeah. No, but we forgot to refrigerate them.
That'd be okay.
What? No Probithol pops?
Probithol pops. Just as a quick aside before we go to the next break, talking about dementia, and I came across this very recent UK study that probably Dr. McGettigan has heard of, but this was a study in the UK with 9,000 postmenopausal women, average age of 64, and it was determined that the more estrogen they had during their previous premenopausal life, the less likely they were to have dementia later on. And they did this by measuring the number of their reproductive lifespan. So how many years between their first menstruation and menopause, and then how many times they were pregnant when you get that big bump in estrogen. And the ones who likely had the highest levels of estrogen had the lowest possibility of dementia. And that's was kind of fascinating for me about the benefits of hormones.
So does that equate to the number of children you've had too?
Yes. Well, pregnancies. But yeah, in the length of the pregnancy, I suppose, because doesn't your estrogen remain high for...
Well, I was just thinking of an ex of mine who told me she had four children, that each child she lost 25% of her mental capacity.
Well, that's teenagers. But
that's another disease.
That'll be next week's topic.
Yeah, we can cover that study next week. But we're going to come back in a moment and talk more with Robin Coates. Welcome back. You're listening to Quality of Life Radio Show. And I'm Ronald Zach, co-host here with Jack McGettigan. And we're talking with Robin Coates. You can join the conversation if you like at 520-790-2040. Now's your opportunity to talk to a placement specialist and one of the best, Robin Coates. So what are the types of facilities where you find placements for people with dementia?
Well, there's independent living, which a lot of people think that's like an apartment, but it's not, because independent living would typically be in a larger center and they provide oversight. they would do daily check-ins. So if they don't see you coming down to breakfast at your usual time, somebody's going to call and make sure you're okay. But you still get services, meals, housekeeping, laundry. So that's independent living. That would be the least expensive. And then once you need some help, if you need medication management, showers, help with dressing, toileting, that would be considered assisted living. And then the next level of care would be if someone has dementia and they're not able to function well in an independent or assisted environment, then they would be in a memory care. And then every now and then we see somebody who gets a diagnosis of behavioral care, and that's usually someone who is extremely combative, they're a danger to themselves or others. It's not all that common, but sometimes if someone has a diagnosis of frontal temporal dementia or Lewy body dementia, it affects a different part of their brain. And it's not that they want to be that way, but unfortunately, people who do have that diagnosis oftentimes become combative, so they can't live in a typical memory care community. And then that being said, in addition to centers, then we have adult care homes that are usually licensed for 10 people, sometimes more. And they provide assisted living services. Typically, that population's a little bit older and they need a higher level of care. There's not a lot going on. They're not running around playing tennis in an assisted living home, but they're getting good care and food and full service. So housekeeping, laundry, meals. Oftentimes they provide transportation to a doctor's office. Most of these assisted living homes now have a nurse practitioner that comes into the home. And especially if someone has dementia and they don't have a way to get to the doctor, or it's too confusing to get them up and dressed into a doctor, they can just see the nurse practitioner that would visit them at the home.
And I've heard that the capability to play pickleball is one of the last to go.
I wouldn't know about that, Ron.
Okay. That's something I heard.
I know sweet is the last taste to go. So if you want cookies and ice cream, you go find yourself an assisted living, because they have an endless supply.
I do have a question for you, Robin. To do this kind of work, I mean, it reminds me of people who get into different areas of medicine, like oncology. That, I mean, it's just got to be one of the toughest jobs. This one, to me, seems very similar. What made you passionate about this? Perhaps there was something that happened in your life, if you're willing to share, or...
Well, I got into this industry out of desperation, Doctor. Yes. I had worked in advertising. I transferred out here with Gannett Newspapers, and I worked for Tucson Lifestyle Magazine. And when the economy crashed, I started managing... A gentleman had a franchise, and he did placement, and he also hired caregivers. So I was running his franchise, and I met someone who was a sales and marketing director in a community, and they needed someone to work in their memory care community. And basically, when people would come in to look around, I would tour them around the building. And working in memory care and not knowing anything about it, I decided to go to the Alzheimer's Association, and I became a trained Alzheimer's support group facilitator. And then I became a certified dementia practitioner, which was a class I took. And I learned a lot running a support group at the Pima Council on Aging for 3 years, because I worked for someone who was the head of the Alzheimer's Association at the time. And just listening to people's stories and understanding what they're going through, you have to look at things from a different perspective. And most of the caregivers who work in memory care are trained to work with people who have dementia. It's not the same as assisted living, because people need cueing, they need redirecting. They might ask you the same question 20 times. A lot of times they're looking for their parents and they're 90 years old. So it's just... I decided to get the education. I also started going to TMC Senior Services has some really good programs. And I started going to their support groups, and they would show films, and they brought in neurologists. And there really is no requirement. That's the sad thing.
No, but it sounds that you became somewhat passionate about this.
I really was just fascinated. I think getting to know my residents when I worked in a memory care, because there's still a person inside of there. And a lot of people don't understand how to deal with dementia because they're afraid of it. And a lot of times when someone has dementia, they know something's wrong instinctively. They're confused, they're scared, and they tend to isolate. So when I worked in memory care, our goal was, we don't want people sitting in their rooms all day. Let's come out and talk. Let's, you know, talk about where they grew up. What kind of pets did you have? Because remember, when someone has dementia, they're way back in their mind. So they want to talk about where they're at and what they remember. And a lot of times it's their childhood. So that really is how I developed my business, was learning about it and just being around people with dementia and studying what's out there and how to help people.
Wow. And we do have a caller on the line. We have Mark. Mark, thank you very much for calling and thanks for listening. What's your question?
Another great show.
Oh, thank you.
Another great show you have. And there's a short list of six things to reduce your risk of Alzheimer's and other dementias. I'm not sure you really talked about all of these, but the first one is physical activity. And the second one is eating healthily. And third one, I can't remember what it was.
Sounds like he's a contestant for our massage.
Anyway, yeah, there's three more. So don't smoke. And, you know, old people today are now taking up marijuana. I bet that's not very helpful. And
I actually have a woman, and her husband has frontal temporal dementia, and he's quite combative and refuses to go to the doctor. So she spoke to her physician about using some THC and CBD just to help him sleep because he was up all night. And so far it seems to be working. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I'm not suggesting that anyone do that, but I have heard of a lot of people in that population either getting gummies or CBD for pain, and they've had results, but I haven't tried it myself. But then again, I don't have dementia, thankfully.
Well, it says don't smoke, period. I would think not to smoke even.
Well, that's what gummies are for.
Pretty bad.
Yeah, they take the gummies. They're not smoking it. They're chewing it.
Gummy rhymes with dummies, doesn't it? Anyway, it says drink less alcohol and stay mentally and socially active and take control of your health. Well, if you have Alzheimer's dementia, maybe you're not in control of your health. I don't know.
Well, these are the things you're telling us to prevent you from getting dementia.
I just Googled it. And anyway, so because I was thinking that definitely smoking crap and eating poorly and drinking alcohol and poor physical activity is going to be a big detriment.
It is. Well, thank you very much for that, Mark. We appreciate the call and thank you for listening. I had somebody texted me a question.
One.
Oh, okay. Do you got one?
I want to know, what applications might there be of artificial intelligence to dealing with the individual who is affected with dementia?
I have no idea.
Well, there is.
We do have an expert on this topic.
We do?
Yes. Veronica.
That's right. Millennial that she is.
Putting you on the spot, Veronica.
Fair enough.
So how would you use, because it is being used. And there are applications for that.
Sure. I think part of the most natural way you would see artificial intelligence used was to have some sort of ongoing interpersonal relationship with someone who can kind of meet them where they're at. if you have someone with dementia who's having a difficult time, I mean, AI is not going to get upset about repeating the same answer over and over again.
That's true.
That being said,
I've tried that with Alexa.
I would wonder if that would be as fulfilling of a relationship for them. And I don't know if there's evidence to really play that out either direction.
Well, physical touch is a big part of therapy for people with dementia because it's soothing for them. So you can't get that from AI. But if you have a robot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, and somebody who's willing to listen to the same thing over and over again, there's some possibilities there, I think.
Well, but there's other types of applications, you know, monitoring. I mean, even the, you know, the emergency buttons. There's other devices that will monitor medication administration. Mm-hmm. You can determine if somebody's taking their medication or not, or how if they're taking it properly. And you know, we've gotten into a lot of monitoring systems, and I've seen patients remaining at home with the assistance of you know, cameras and other kinds of technology. We have just before our next break, let's talk to Lawrence. Lawrence, thank you for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. I just wanted to compliment the young lady you have there working. I missed her name. I had to take care of some business in the bank. But, you know, it's important for families who are looking for people for assisted living to hire a consulting firm or somebody who, you know, that she's in business with to help find and go to see the different facilities. You should not go on your own. I had to do that with my mother before I found where I wanted to put her in a certain place. And my wife recently experienced that with her father. He needs a place for assisted living. And she was able to go through, I'm sorry, I'm on the bumpy road, to go through that process with a consultant to help find the place for your loved one to be. And what also it is with a consultant, you can also negotiate some cost down to get started. So I just want to throw that in there and appreciate the work you're doing, because it is very difficult when you're dealing with somebody with dementia.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Lawrence.
You know.
Yep. Thank you, Lawrence. And we're going to go to our break, and we'll be right back with more of our guest, Robin Coates. Welcome back. You're listening to Quality of Life, the radio show, sponsored by Quality of Life Medical Center and Research Center. You can call us at 520-790-2040. And Robin, there's one more question that was texted to me. Some people do that. And that's, what about placement of people who have a pet and want to be with their pet?
Well, one of the questions I ask when I do my intake interview with people is, do they want to bring their pet? Because pets are really good therapy, especially dogs. Mm-hmm. It depends on the care home or the community. Not everyone allows pets. Most people will allow a small dog, but the resident has to be able to take care of the dog or pay someone to do that. Most care homes and communities are a little more strict with cats. If it's a cat that's going to stay in the room and not get out, and they're going to clean the litter box, sometimes they have flexibility. It's just one of the criteria that you have to list, because I usually ask people location. I like people to be near their families in case there's a problem. I like them to be near a hospital. Food is important to a lot of people. Of course, care is at the top of the list. But I think if someone has a pet and they're attached to the pet, it's important to keep them together.
I agree. And like me personally, I happen to have and depend on an emotional support axolotl. And have you had anybody trying to place a salamander?
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, that could come in the future. Robin, how do people contact you if they want to?
The name of my company is Tucson Senior Placement. You can Google me if you'd like to read my reviews. They're all there. My direct telephone number, my cell phone, is 520-373-0349. And if you'd like to send me an email, it's my name, Robin Coates, R-O-B-I-N-C-O-A-T-S, at Hotmail.
Thank you so much for coming. Really appreciate it, and hope you'll come back again sometime.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So I wanted to give a little bit of an update on our BioT open house that we had the other night. It was Thursday night, I think. And we had great food, great company, great drink, if you like water. And it went very well. We had people from BioT there. I was also there, and we had several participants who were asking about the BioT. It's the hormone replacement therapy with pellets, and it went very well. A lot of good information, a lot of great questions from people.
What was the toughest question they threw at you that you couldn't answer?
Oh gosh, there's so many. Some of the questions had to do with different types of comorbidities and interactions with other medications. One of the things that I hear often is that people will say, well, once you start on hormone replacement therapy, then you can never come off. Now, is that true, Dr. McGettigan?
No, I don't think that's true, but what I would tell patients when I was counseling them on this is that once you start feeling better, you just tell me when you want to start feeling bad and we'll stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And most people stay on because they want to, but people do come off. I've had patients who had needed for whatever reason to take a holiday, but it's not that your body doesn't resume producing its own hormones. It just wasn't producing enough of them to start with.
Right. And unfortunately, as we age, that keeps declining. So when you stop getting them replaced, whatever level you were at previously, you're going to be at an even lower level when, you know, just unfortunately because of the aging process. So very few people that I recall ever ask me to stop.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I don't encounter that either. We're going to do that again in the future, right?
Yeah, I would think would be a good idea, probably on a quarterly basis, if you mm-hmm. didn't mind it too much, to let people come in, find out more about it, and I think the amount of, that's assuming you have room in your schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would say we should start letting people know and they can begin to RSVP, just get on a list, and then we can call them when we have the next date, and we'll certainly have it on the radio show when the next dates are coming up.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So if you are interested in attending, it would be nice to start assembling a list now.
And collecting the water for the drinks.
Right. Because we have a bit of a shortage of water in the office. But if this was in October, next one will be January probably.
Unless there's a huge demand between now and then, you might want to move it up.
Right. We could absolutely do that. It's actually a lot of fun to have people come in and hear people's concerns and interests and you know, all of the ways in which people are benefited from hormone therapy it's pretty remarkable. I wanted to ask you, Dr. McGettigan, about the study. We were talking about two different studies when we had Yvonne here. Yvonne's the research manager.
Correct.
Yeah. And she had talked about the two ongoing studies. And one was a back pain study.
One's a back pain and the other one is a diabetes study for recently diagnosed diabetics, type 2 diabetics. And we've had patients come in for both. I know we've got a couple patients coming in this week for the back pain study. And I actually saw the first patient for that study this last week. And what was interesting is that particular patient did not have insurance. She's got sciatic pain. And part of the evaluation is if they have not had recent study of their back, is that the study will cover that, which in her case is going to require an MRI. She was very happy to hear that that was going to be covered for her, along with receiving a little bit of, you know, stipend for coming in for her, her transportation and time. So that, that one of the side benefits, which I think Yvonne did mention when we were talking about, you know, what happens when you're in a research study, is there are a lot of things that are covered by the pharmaceutical company to make sure that you qualify for the study. And if you don't, you're not going to be charged for a test that was needed, but may have proved that you did or didn't need to be part of that particular study. And I think MRIs are, they're several hundred dollars, I believe, at least these days.
At least, especially if you know, I always like looking at the EOBs, the explanations of benefits, and the MRI will be like $1,200. The insurance allows $75, and then, you know, they pay that. But if you're private pay,
you get paid $1,200.
Yeah, correct. Exactly. Which is sounds horrible to me that insurance companies are like that. But we knew that.
We did.
And the diabetic study, excuse me, is going well as also?
Oh yeah, these studies take a while to enroll because there are a long list these days of inclusion and exclusion criteria, and we have to check the boxes either yes or no, and unfortunately in some cases you do not qualify, but you will come away from them with some new found knowledge about what's going on with your particular issue if you are diabetic, or in this case if you have sciatic type pain. So anybody who's interested, again, they can always reach out to us. And if you have a condition that we didn't mention that you'd like to be part of a research study, we do have a very long list of potential subjects in all of the different pretty much medical areas. And we'd love to have you on the list, and we will reach out to you when we happen to get a study looking at that particular issue going forward.
And do you ever, if you have somebody with a particular condition, maybe a very rare condition, do you actively seek out studies for those?
We do if we have a number of patients mm-hmm. that seem to qualify. Some of these are so rare. And we did do one of those studies. I may have mentioned it on a previous show, dealing with complex regional pain syndrome.
Ah, yes. We're coming to the end of the show. QLMC.com is the website for Quality of Life Medical Center. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.